Welcome to Greatness, where the world's leading thinkers share their ideas about how to create greatness, great leaders, great teams, and great organizations. Why be good when you can be great? This is Gretchen Gagel, and I am so excited to welcome Jim Ellis, Vice President of Global Construction for Microsoft, to the Greatness Podcast. Welcome, Jim.
Well, thank you, Gretchen. Glad to be here and glad to be with you and talking about a very relevant, you know, planet-sized challenge here today.
Yeah, and definitely a planet-sized challenge. I saw Jim speak at the CII CURT Construction Industry Institute Construction User Roundtable Conference in August of 2021. And I walked away thinking, wow, these are really big ideas, and I'd love to talk to Jim about them on the Greatness Podcast. Before we get into those big ideas, though, Jim, I love starting with people's personal stories. How did you become involved in the construction industry? How did your life journey bring you to where you are today?
So interesting. I started my career with DuPont back in the early 80s. And most of that was in the operations space, right? Manufacturing and helping to support the various growth aspirations for the DuPont company. And I had really the opportunity as part of manufacturing to lead some major scale projects early in my career. Got a keen interest in, you know, both engineering, procurement, construction management, commissioning as an end-to-end process to deliver on the growth aspirations for the company. And so I spent a big part of my career in operations, but I probably spent a bigger part into the actual the building side of things, right? Starting with the front end development of new growth projects and projects that actually supported our asset base as well. And then from there, you know, led into the engineering requirements and the procurement supply chain requirements, and then constructing, commissioning, and then starting them up and handing them over back to operations, which to me, that was a lot of fun because every time you had a chance to do a project, it was something new. It was something you can put your fingerprint on and said, wow, you know, I was part of that and making a difference for the shareholder. And so that got me excited. And I spent a lion's share, as I said, my career there and moved over to another company, large petrochemical company, SABIC, and spent quite a few years there, 7 years building their global capability to do similar. And, you know, you think about the growth in petchem too, which is not insignificant over the last 40, 50 years. And that was a lot of fun. And then finally, I made the transition after retiring and thinking I was going to retire into coming into Microsoft and saying, wow, here's another huge growth opportunity sitting in a company that just, you know, hyperscaling data centers so that all of us could have access to, you know, cloud capability and really kind of make the world even flatter, right, in terms of communications and opportunity for us to really grow, learn, and develop and make a difference for lots of people around the world.
Wow. And it is amazing that you've kept up with the demand for data. I mean, I just think of the exponential explosion in the pieces of data in the world. And Jim, one of the reasons I love this question, I actually started out in manufacturing also. I was hired by Ralston Purina in 1986 as their first female operations manager. My glamour days of running a dog food plant in Oklahoma, and then I ran a cereal plant in Iowa and a baby food plant in upstate New York prior to getting my MBA and going to work for FMI in 94, which kind of started my journey into construction. And how fun is construction? I mean, we build and maintain the assets of the world. If anybody wants a computer or wants to sit in a restaurant or drive on a road, it all gets constructed.
Absolutely.
Which is what I love about it. So this presentation that you gave around sustainability, as I said, I was sitting in the audience thinking, wow, we've been talking about this for a while. Like, are we really going to crack this nut? And you shared a story with me prior to starting the recording about a conversation you were involved in back in the 90s. Maybe you could talk about that as this whole discussion about sustainability and where it's been going for the last couple of decades.
Sure. No. Yeah, I had the opportunity, actually still in manufacturing at the time and operations down in Corpus Christi, Texas, where I was leading that site. And I got the call one day, why don't you come in and join us, Jim? We're getting a Texas commission for sustainability, which was an extension of the national program on creating a sustainable environment. And that was back in, I think, 1994, right? And the same very discussions we're having today were the same discussions we had back then. And I have to reflect back on that, you know, personally, as well as, from a standpoint of the bigger idea. Has that really ever come to fruition? And have I put enough energy into that as part of my, passion to really make a difference for the world? And I'd have to say the answer to that is no, and we haven't really made a lot of progress. We've talked a lot about it. We've seen some what I'll call pockets of excellence that go on in various businesses and market segments that I think are starting to make some inroads and improvements. I think the work that was done back then on greenhouse gases was good. It was very industry specific at the time. It was tied to the ozone depletion issues that were going. Again, there was a lot of debate on whether the science was legitimate at the time, but at the end of the day, it was the right decision to, reduce the carbon emissions that were going into the atmosphere and creating, issues for us that we're facing even today and our future generations are going to continue to face unless we step up and really take this on as a challenge and make a difference with it.
Yeah. Sitting here in Australia, I think we were the beneficiaries of that since I believe most of the ozone hole was sitting over Australia at some point, if it's not already sitting here. But yeah, we've had having this conversation for a long time. But I think one of the things that struck me, Jim, was the boldness of the statements that Microsoft in general has made about sustainability and very publicly. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, so these are truly bold statements, and it really goes with the corporate culture of, we are going to make a difference and clearly have a positive impact on the environment that we touch. And maybe it's not one where, we're the most significant contributor to the issue, but we certainly know that we are a contributor. And so it's important for us that we talk about embodied carbon. How are we going to get to an improved position on embodied carbon? And clearly, we talked a lot today about construction. One might say, well, how is construction really relevant here? Well, it represents about 17% of the total embodied carbon across the globe that we have opportunity. And you think about the types of materials that we use, concrete, steel, others, that we probably have never really questioned. And the opportunities for us is to really look for material substitutes that can create the right, what I will call physical characteristics, but also create a much more positive impact relative to having less carbon and creating a better kind of sustainable future for us, right, in terms of that. So to me, that's all part of the challenge. So embodied carbon, the amount of water and fresh water that we're consuming across the globe is just, amazing when you start to put the numbers together. And, one of the things that, especially in the petrochemical where we're highly process oriented, that water, for the most part, 70 to 80% of it goes back up into the atmosphere. Maybe it gets recycled back into our water systems, but a lot of times it's wasted. And, how do we get to kind of a concept where we're not only water neutral in terms of the water coming in is preserved to the point where it's recycled and we get value out of it over and over again in kind of a cyclical way, to maybe even there's an opportunity for us to be water positive. And Microsoft is really kind of contributing in that way by working on technologies that kind of use less and less water to cool our facilities and more air-cooled technologies, which you might say is more expensive. Maybe the footprint has some impact relative to carbon, right, because it's cooling related. But at the end of the day, are we net making a difference in terms of combination of energy consumption plus water efficiency? And so we're committed on that front as well. And you might say, well, does construction play a role in that? Absolutely, we do. I mean, in terms of the water use we have. But it's more into the design of our facilities and the operating facilities, but it starts with us in construction and making sure we get it right on the front end here. And the third piece is clearly an area where we're focusing on 70% reduction in our waste. The construction process generates a lot of waste. Sometimes we're going in there and we're dismantling facilities, for example, first, before we can even get land ready to construct a new facility. What do we do with that material? We put it in landfills. Is that creating any value? No. The opportunity is really to take a more cyclical approach. How do we recycle? How do we recapture some of the value out of those materials? What's that model look like? But to do that with goals of 70% reduction in where we are today by 2030 is a huge task for us to kind of take on. But we're committed to that. So 30% reduction in carbon emissions, right? Upwards of 40 or 50 is more of a realistic expectation that I'm having placed on me right now. So even more than what we had originally committed to. Getting to water positive and then 70% recycle of our waste material that's generated as part of the construction process. So all, very notable kind of challenges that we're willing to take on and work on together.
And Jim, that's one thing I really appreciate about great leadership. And I teach leadership at the Australian National University's MBA program in the University of Denver. And I use these podcasts quite a bit with my students as well. And that, yes, we need to be collaborative as leaders and we're moving towards a collaborative thing, but it's having the courage to have that vision to say 30% isn't good enough. I'm actually shooting for 40 or 50%. How do I stretch my team? How do I really push them to think creatively? And that's the one thing that came across so clearly in the presentation. People talk about greenwashing, that people are just making statements to sound good to investors and consumers and everything. But I really felt the depth of your personal passion around this when you were speaking about it. And talk to us a little bit about that and kind of the so you're trying to lead this effort within your team. I'm sure there's people that are just jumping on board, and there's probably some people that aren't jumping on board with this.
Yeah, so great question, and it really does start at the top, right? So I know that with Microsoft, I have really the support of the highest leadership all the way up to Satya, who's our CEO. I know he's committed when he puts $1 billion in funding only for sustainability and technology development to help support the varying different technologies that we could deploy to be more sustainable as a company. That takes huge commitment. It takes commitment. It also takes leadership to go back to your shareholders and say, hey, this is something that is important. And so it flows from there. And then it flows as an expectation. It doesn't just flow as an aspiration, but as an expectation. And from there, all of us, that are committed, self included, have passion for that because we know it's the right thing to do, number one. Number two, we're supported by senior leaders in terms of the funding and the resources necessary to make it happen. And three, if there are blockers or barriers, we know that senior leaders are going to step in to help us get to where we need to be to ensure that we can create that right result at the end of the day. But it does start with leadership, to your point. And sometimes you have to have tough discussions. I think the conference was a way of me also delivering a message to many of the petrochemical players that I spent 40 plus years with, saying, okay, it's great to talk about renewable resources. What are you doing? Are you really stepping up to the plate? Are you investing in renewable resources? Are you saying, hey, the only thing that makes this work is government subsidies? In fact, I was really kind of had a bit of a chuckle when they asked the question, what would you do, if the government doesn't support you? I said, I am not waiting for the government to support me. The government's important, stakeholder in all of this. They can help to set, the right legislation and so forth to be supportive. But at the end of the day, are they jumping on the bandwagon? Or other than just, I think your word was greenwashing, this. To me, it's about us stepping up as leaders. It has to start with corporations. Corporations have to be committed. They have to committed to do the right thing. Government will follow because they know it's the right thing and it'll eventually get them votes. So at the end of the day, it is about being that leader that gets out in front, says, this is the right thing to do, thus we're going to do it.
Yeah, that's a great point about sending that message to your peers in the industry too. And so just yesterday, I was giving a presentation on global trends to 50 leaders in one of the largest construction companies here in Australia. And sustainability was one of the seven trends that I talked about. How are your suppliers reacting to this message? How are your engineering and construction partners reacting to these goals and either helping or not helping you with them?
Yeah, so yeah, we can't do it without the support of the supply chain. That's clear, right? So it can start with Microsoft, then it has to go through the supply chain. All of our partners that we have got to be stepping up. You know, we don't procure all the materials, for example, to get our data centers built. Some of those bulk materials are actually procured by our, you know, general contractors. If we're using a engineering, procurement, construction firm, they're maybe buying it on our behalf. So we do expect, again, that they are aligned with our core values. This is a core value. And if there's not alignment with the core value, then there's probably not a relationship moving forward with Microsoft. So there's that element of accountability in it. I have to say, though, that most are quite supportive. It has to come with a little bit of a push. It's getting a little bit more push, which I like. And they're saying, hey, Jim, you've given us, you know, this environmental embodied carbon calculator where we're measuring every single piece of equipment and materials that go into that equipment in terms of the amount of embodied carbon. And you're holding me accountable to go forward and look for substitute materials that I can put in that create a positive carbon advantage for the build. And we're willing to do that. And so therefore, it's going to cost you a little bit more in terms of the total, you know, capital cost associated with getting that done. Are you still in? Well, the answer to that is yes, because it still is the right decision. And at the end of the day, it's an investment. And I did talk about it not being a cost, but an investment into our future. And how is that passed on? I think it's an important part in the other direction of the supply chain. When we have customers that know that we have this value and they see it throughout the supply chain, there is a willingness to pay premium for the products that you're providing because they know it's the right thing to do and they want to also be green and support green activities and green companies that are aligned with their core values. I'll share with you one story that's outside of the data center space, which was related to my work in SABIC, and that was around creating a cyclical economy around plastic pellets and plastic recycling. We actually had subscriptions from our customers years in advance when we announced the ability to have the technology be deployed into a capital project to build the facility that was going to take and not mechanically separate the various polymers that we have in our industry, in that industry now, but just put them all into a common thermal oxidizer that enables us to later separate them out and get useful, you know, feedstock and raw material into the feeding of new plastics, which came from a recycled product to begin with. So truly a circular kind of economy approach to the actual polymer industry, which is gaining advantage and creating shareholder value because the price point is higher and the margin is greater. So it's a net present value improvement for the company that's decided to do that. So win-win-win across the board, right? When you think about those kinds of strategies being deployed.
Yeah. And I think consumers are starting to have more presence to the fact that we drive these things by the companies that we support too. Investors are getting on board, institutional investors with where the investment dollars, but that I can make a difference as a consumer with what I choose to purchase because of what that organization is either doing or not doing. So you threw out one crazy idea in a, you know, room full of engineers, right? Things like eliminating rebar.
Yes.
I mean, really pushing the envelope of creativity about building materials. What are some of the things that you all are doing?
So, I mean, we're looking at ideas like that, okay? And all the ideas don't come from Microsoft. They come from various parts of the supply chain. And we put pilots together in order to, you know, support the evolution of those technologies that can add value. So we're looking for concrete substitutes, obviously, right? We talked about the rebar. You know, how do you cure concrete more efficiently without the use of steel, right, and iron? How do you look for steel substitutes? Right now we're looking into things like fiberglass reinforced polymer that has equal, you know, strength to steel, where you can go in and selectively put parts of your asset up utilizing, you know, that instead of steel. And it reduces the overall footprint of carbon across that supply chain, so net positive. So these are some of the ideas we're looking at. Energy, we're looking again at renewable, whether that be hydrogen-based or other renewable fuels. We're continuing to look for substitutes. Our goal is 100% renewables by 2030. So we're going to have clearly another commitment that we're trying to work through. And some of it is about also eliminating the need for backup generation, where you can go to more of a battery type technology and eliminate the use of other sources of backup power that generate a lot of carbon emissions. So these are some of the ideas. Technology is our friend. We need to continue to spend the resources within the company. As I said earlier, $1 billion corporately in Microsoft to basically fund the development of new technologies that are just focused in on improving the sustainability of how we actually approach the market, whether that be construction or whether that be with our, our servers and the services that we do provide to our customers, so forth and so on. So I'm very proud to work for a company like Microsoft that just truly gets it and is willing to back it financially, back it with leadership, back it with support, and hold us accountable as leaders of the company to make sure it gets implemented.
Yeah. And in my speech yesterday, the point was brought up by one of the attendees about sustainability is not just about the environment. It's about community, societal. I happen to know that, for example, you're piloting an initiative to help make sure that we're taking good care of construction workers on construction sites. So I go beyond just materials and environment in the values that you all are putting into sustainability, that you're really thinking more broadly about the sustainability of our community.
Absolutely. It's essential. The community gives us the right to operate. And I learned that very early on in my career. And that's become more and more evident as my career has progressed, as the voice of the various stakeholders that we have to satisfy at the end of the day. I'll use that word, right? Obviously, we have customers. Obviously, we have shareholders. Obviously, we have employees. But I'd say the fourth important stakeholders, the communities in which we operate in, we got to be part of that community. We've got to step up and make sure that that's visible. They know that we care. And a caring part is not only monetarily shown, but also shown in terms of the sweat equity that we put into those communities for those of us that reside in them, right, and support. So clearly, we want to make sure that those relationships are sustained. When you put an asset down on the ground, it's not there 5 years, it's not there 10, it's there 30 to 40 to 50 in some cases. So you're a part of that community, and so behaving that way and becoming a member that contributes to that community is an extremely important part of a sustainable future.
And you bring up a really interesting point that we talked about yesterday as well, asset resilience, infrastructure resilience. I'm doing the CURT owner study, CII CURT owner study right now, and this has come up as a topic by some of the executives that I'm speaking with, that how can we ensure that assets are going to be there in 50 years with climate change, more storms here in Australia. We've had, bushfires and flooding, and the permafrost is melting in Russia, and it's causing pipelines and roads to buckle. Is that something top of mind for you all, asset resilience?
Absolutely it is, and it really starts with site selection. Moving forward with our growth plans, we take in consideration all of those parameters, okay? Are we going to be able to go to a given site and be able to have that asset run efficiently and not be subject to a lot of risks as it relates to things changing in the world, right? So that's number one. And number two, when we are operating there, are we a net positive contributor to making sure that given region is not impacted by our presence, versus being a detractor where maybe we have an impact that's not perhaps the right site selection for us to move forward with. So it starts there, and it goes through that life cycle of the asset to making sure that, we can operate it over that 40, 50 year space to be a positive contributor, not a negative contributor.
That's great. So as we wrap up here, Jim, I'm a leader in the construction industry, and I'm listening to this podcast, or in any industry, really. This doesn't have to be construction specific. What are your what's your tip? I don't even know how to phrase this question, but where do you start when thinking about sustainability and these big, bold goals and innovations that we're talking about?
As a leader, I think a lot of it's about your passion, right? If there's a passion for it, that passion usually is burning. If that passion is kind of coupled with the support for that passion, in many, many ways that support comes through, whether that be from financial support from the corporation or just being aligned with the values that you have personally, I would say get going. Don't wait. Move forward. Make it work. And learn along the way. Fail fast, I think, is a model kind of for leaders, and then take the learnings from there and build on those to make it better with time. And the key message I left with the petrochemical guys was, we can just talk about it and have excuses of why not. We should be having the discussion and how do we go forward collectively and get started. And the key is to get started. It'll be less than perfect, but every incremental, piece that we take on in terms of that improvement is going to have a positive value if we all stepped up to the plate and really started to take it seriously rather than just talking about it. So as a leader, you've got to have that passion. You have to have that drive. Motivate others to come along for the ride with you, because I think that's going to be the key, is the critical mass of all of us getting together and going in that same direction. And ultimately, we have, again, a very daunting challenge, if not stepped up to, that we're going to have to deal with. And we are not going to have to deal with it. It's our grandchildren and their grandchildren and their grandchildren that we want to leave this world in a better place than which we found it.
Yeah, that's actually, Jim, you just almost said verbatim my personal mission statement. Which is to leave the world a better place than I found it, is exactly my personal mission statement of the last 20 years. So way to nail that, Jim. I know you're incredibly, incredibly busy. I am so grateful to you for taking the time to come and share this important message with the Greatness Podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gretchen. Really appreciate it. Yep. And I look forward to maybe some future ones as we progress and share our great stories of success.
Interested in hearing more? Visit us at greatnessconsulting.com. Thank you.